and we welcome Arbutus with open arms and love and tremendous gratitude. This is her first official visit to Missouri as the Western Region trustee for World Service. This is a trial program that our World Service has put into operation to see if perhaps by having a traveling regional trustee, LMM can be helped to learn more about spreading our message and doing our 12-step work worldwide. She has helped me tremendously as delegate. I've cried on her shoulder many times, and I'm sure that many other delegates from the states west of the Mississippi have done the same. And she has shared with us her 10 years experience of traveling around these United States and delivering our message all over this country. And she does it anytime she's asked, and does it willingly and lovingly. So now I'm not going to say any more. I'm going to give you our beloved Arbutus.
This is a contrivance of an AA member, you can tell. And I'm supposed to put it on my neck. Now what do you do? Does it hang down or up? Oh, fiddlesticks. I've got three other things to do with my hands. My name is Arbutus O'Neill. And by the grace of God, I belong to the Al-Anon family group. Chris is most gracious. She said I had worked in World Service for 10 years, and I would like to say to you that I've been in the family group since 1948. I'm what is known in the Al-Anon family group circles as a long-timer. And I used to be exceedingly proud of this, and very recently I learned that this is just a polite way for my peers to call me a slow learner. But I'm still proud of it. And I'm delighted. I am just delighted to see all of you. I want, before I get into this structure thing that we're going to do tonight, to learn a little bit about you. I've told you my name, and Chris has told me that I'm your regional trustee. Am I doing something wrong? But it wasn't easy. But what happened to me? Well, you don't wear backwards, as I can tell. Well, it's a good thing I'm not a television entertainer. But the airtime would be gone before I got my equipment set. And in the meantime, I'm going back to what I started to say and say to you that in this fellowship of ours, there is no competition, thank goodness. So I don't have to be the best there is, but this experimental thing is getting to be a little bit rugged in my life. I went into World Service in 1961 as an experimental delegate from the state of Texas. The rationalization on the World Service level is that if I can't ruin it, it'll work. And Chris told you also that the regional trustee plan is also on the experimental level. She implied that I was the only regional trustee, but this isn't true. We have a second regional trustee now from Eastern Canada. Next year we'll have one from Eastern United States, which will be your full panel of regional trustees. My family is a little concerned about this experimental thing. I did a research project for the state hospital system in Texas last year on an experimental basis. My children are pretty sure that I'll go to heaven on an experimental basis. And if they could see me working with this new dad, they'd know it. But Just don't worry about it, Chris. I'm getting it. When we come into the Al-Anon family groups, we are told almost at our very first meeting that alcoholism is a disease of a threefold nature. And this comes as a great surprise to some of us, because we have for long since begun to believe that alcoholism is anything else but a disease. We've been conditioned from the time that we were little boys and girls to cope with almost any problem that can come up. It starts when we're small children with our mothers. Our teachers enforce this idea. Our Sunday school teachers go further with this idea. We are taught to be good citizens. We're taught to be good mothers or fathers. We're taught to be good wives or husbands. But nothing in our training program as children ever gives us any conditioning to cope with the disease of alcoholism. And so when at long last we come to a place where we begin to learn something about this problem that is so devastating to most of us, it comes as a great deal of comfort to learn that this is a disease of a threefold nature. I think that at this time it is a little comforting for us to learn that our trust and our love has not been so misplaced as we had begun to believe. And then we stay in Al-Anon for a little while and we learn about the threefold recovery program. And the Al-Anon emblem that's rather roughly drawn that stands on the table beside of me gives you an idea of what I'm talking about. A threefold recovery program. Now the AA people call the first leg of the triangle that encloses our circle of unity recovery. But in Al-Anon we do not. We do not have the physical aspects of the disease. We'll probably never recovery. We get a little weller as we go along, but we won't ever get well. So we call the bottom leg of our triangle acceptance. And we have a framework within which we work on this acceptance. It's called the 12 steps of AA recovery. In this framework, we begin to understand the dilemma that has so completely devastated our lives. First, we began to understand a little bit about alcoholism, and then we began to learn a little bit about ourselves. And it is this understanding that the steps provide for us. This is a discipline, if you please, a framework. It disciplines our thinking, it disciplines our attitudes, and finally, it hopefully restores us to sanity and preserves our stability. And then we have a second leg of the triangle that we call unity. And again, we have a framework. It's called the traditions. Now, in the framework of the traditions, we learn how to relate one to the other in the group. We learn how to relate one group to another in a district. We learn how to relate one district to another in an assembly area. And we learn how to relate the assembly areas into the World Service Conference level. And so we have the second leg of our triangle closed up in the traditions of unity. And for a long time, we were able to function quite well within these two frameworks of service. The AA people and everything that we know, or most everything that we know, we have borrowed without permission from the AA people. They worked out the bugs of this program, and we profited by their mistakes and avoided them, and so set up frameworks of our own, adapting them to the needs of the families of alcoholics. Bill Wilson puts it like this: we come into Al-Anon because we have to, just as the alcoholic comes into AA because they have to. The alcoholic comes into AA in order not to die or go mad. The Al-Anon member comes into, or the non-alcoholic comes into Al-Anon for almost the same reason. We either find a haven or a security or we'll explode. And in the loving kindness and in the firm discipline of our group, we learn these things of understanding and acceptance, and we are happy there for a little while. But then after having made an honest effort to adapt the 12 steps to our own way of thinking and to our own lives, we began to get a little uncomfortable, and this is good. This indicates that we're growing a little bit. We've taken the first step, we've taken the fifth step, we've made our amends, We take a personal inventory in the 10th step. We have our prayer and meditation period in the 11th step. We carry the message in the 12th step. And all of this is great, but we're not quite comfortable. And we soon learn why. We're growing. And then when we expand this growth to other groups in the area in the framework of the disciplines, we stay because we have an obligation. We learn something here, we're grateful for it, and we want to give it away. And we're able to do this in a larger area of service. And soon we work in a district, we work in an assembly area, and we grow. We make new friends, we learn new ideas, we're even able to reach some outside agencies and do a little educational work. And this is great. But again, we begin to feel a little bit uncomfortable. And we stay in service because we love it. We come because we must. We remain because we feel obligated or feel responsible. We remain because we love the program. And these two frameworks that we work under up to now have sufficed in doing the things that we needed to have done. We're not as old as AA. AA is 35 years past, and we're not quite yet 20 years old. And these things have sufficed. And we have grown from 50 groups from the time that I came in this fellowship to 5,000. And that's pretty good growth. If we gave each group a minimum number of 10 people each, we now number 50,000 people working against the disease of alcoholism as it affects the family. And a lot of things have happened. I have watched this evolution, if you please, for these past 20 years. And I'd like to say to you, it's been the most exciting thing that ever happened to me. Nothing that I have ever experienced has come close to being as exciting as the evolution of the growth of the Al-Anon Fellowship. And we came here, if some of you are long-timers, you will recall, we came here with nothing. And I mean flat zero, nothing. We had no literature, none at all. Not one single scrap of literature did we have when I came here. Now we have 52 pamphlets and 5 hard-covered books. We didn't have a program. We didn't even have a purpose to live by. We had nothing except the very dubious, and I do mean dubious, permission of some new AA people to come to their clubhouses while they had a meeting. And so we came to these clubhouses, and we sat in a little ante room, and we talked. And I don't think you'll have to stretch your imagination to try to think what we talked about. But it was out of these early get-togethers, and I'm a little defensive about this, I'm afraid. It was out of these early get-togethers that the Al-Anon family group evolved. I call Al-Anon a kissing cousin to invention because they were both born of necessity. And the wonderful, far-seeing people who started the life-changing program of AA knew that in time the families would become aware of this necessity. And that's exactly what happened. And back in those early days when we had no literature, we could do nothing except draw on the experience of the AA people. And for those of you who are new in the fellowship, and I'd like so much to say to you over and over again, please be grateful. Please be grateful that you can walk into a well-functioning group and find the 12 steps of acceptance, the 12 traditions of unity, and now the 12 concepts of service all ready for you. Guarded by delegates from the whole North American continent, preserved by a board of trustees and a dedicated headquarters staff, be grateful for those things. Because I can look from where I stand back to the dark days when we had none of these things. And so the only thing we could do, we drew on the knowledge of the AA people. And Bill and Dr. Bob and that first 100 drunks who got sober had not neglected to make provisions for us. Now, I think this comes as a surprise sometimes to some AA people. In our overzealousness to make of Al-Anon a separate entity, maybe we've encouraged this feeling. But the people who started AA never intended for there to be this division or this separation. This was all one problem.
The whole family was involved in the beginning, and it shall always remain so. It is to last. And so they gave us, in the very beginning of the book, two chapters. Now, one of these chapters was entitled To the Wives, clearly indicating that there was no sober women at that time. And the other chapter in the book is called To the Family Afterwards. And I don't know how many of you read the Big AA book. We don't use it in our groups as much anymore as we used to, and I think this is regrettable. If you haven't read the Big AA book recently, please do so. Pay particular attention to the chapter To the Family Afterwards. And pay particular attention to a particular paragraph that I'm going to repeat to you, because this is where I started. This was the thing that we used in that first group that I came to as a preamble, if you please, because we had nothing else. This is what the paragraph says. The past is the principal asset of the alcoholic's family, and frequently it is almost the only one. This painful past can be of infinite value to families still struggling with their problems. We feel that each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others how we were given help is the only thing that makes our life worthwhile. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, your dark past is the greatest possession you have. The key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death or misery for them. I don't believe we have anything in our very most recent literature that so clearly points out what our responsibility is to the families of alcoholics. Neither do I believe that we have anything that more clearly defines how we can show our gratitude for the sobriety in our homes and the good things that sobriety has brought to us. I harp on the fact, I'm sure, that I'm a long-timer. You may get tired of it. I don't. I'm glad to be a long-timer. If I weren't a long-timer, I'd be dead. And I'm grateful for the privilege of being a long-timer. And I have many of the people who came in at the same time come to me now and who are not coming around Al-Anon anymore, and they tell me some of the wildest stories. They tell me that they don't need Al-Anon anymore, that they're working in other fields. Some of them tell me that they're in the counseling field, la-di-da. And some of them tell me that they're now working with mental health. Others are working for the Cancer Society and for Heart Association, and on and on and on. They have taken the tools of our program, stabilized their lives, and gave them purpose for being, and are using it in other areas. And for this, I am grateful. Please don't misunderstand me. But I cannot help but think that anybody can get funds for the Heart Association or the Cancer Society. Anybody can hand out little doodads for the Mental Health Society. Almost anybody can sit behind a desk in an information center. It doesn't take any great talent or any great skill. But very few people can work with the families of alcoholics. Only 50,000 of us to cope with a mass of 25 million people. How does that grab you? And so you want to go into another field where the reward may be a little greater, or your feeling of accomplishment may be a little stronger? Please don't. Because when you take the tools of this program and stabilize your life and walk away and refuse to share, somebody's got to die. Somebody's got to die. And I can count down a group almost any time I want to, and you'll see 2, 3 long-timers in the group. You'll see a whole bunch of new people. And you'll see a little of what we call the middle-timers. But the long-timers are not staying around. And I'd like to say to you that I can't have as much respect for them as I'd like to have, because I don't think they're using the tools of this program in the way that they were intended to be used. And I'm sorry. I feel very strongly about this. So we came here because we had to. We remained because we felt we should, to share our dark past with those who need it.
And then we have this beautiful, brand new third leg of our triangle called service. The one that puts the long timers to work. The facet of our program that gives those of you who have been chairman in your group, secretary in your group, group representative, committeeman, right on up the line, now you have something to do. And the 12 concepts of service is what we're going to talk about tonight. And I hope you ask me questions. Now, I've come a long way in this thing. I used to have very little or no respect for people who had to stand at a table and use notes. But when you get to be a trustee and you get into something that is important as a concept, you use notes if you've got some good sense. And I hope I haven't lost that. So we're going to talk about the concepts tonight, and I'm going to be forced to use some notes. And I won't like it, and I hope you won't be too bored about it, but that's just the way it has to be. After we have outgrown. After we have explored the traditions and learned that there is strength in numbers, this means the other members of our group, whether we like them or not, we learn that our common welfare depends upon unity, on sharing with others, and we learn something that none of us must ever forget. We have but one authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. And I want to tell you who the most important person in Al-Anon is, in case you don't know. It is the person sitting in your chair. The Al-Anon member that's sitting in your chair is the most important member in the entire structure. You have but one authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in your individual conscience. And this accumulation of individual conscience is what makes the group conscience. We grow an awareness that the group conscience is important to personal recovery. Without unity, nobody gets well. And this is when we get these little nitty-gritty personality clashes in the group, and we know what happens to the group. So we learn in the traditions that nothing at all must divert us from the purpose of carrying the message to other families who still have the problem, who still suffer. And we don't let anything distract us from this thing. You read in the preamble that we are a separate entity. This is true. We don't accept contributions from another agency. We're not involved with United Fund and all these little goodies. We stand on our own 2 feet because we do not want any direction from other people. In our groups, we strive for personal serenity, and we further our purpose by passing along understanding. And this brings us to the third legacy, which is the 12 concepts. Now, the concepts show how that the 12-step work can be done on a worldwide basis. Now, up to now, we've worked right in our group, or we've even gone up to the assembly level, and we're getting a lot of people attracted to the program. But an individual Al-Anon member can do very little. And if you'll think back to the time that you came to your first meeting, could you do very much? Had you been able to cope with this problem? I hadn't been. And I can remember the time on a cold November afternoon that I sit in the big middle of a living room in a mean little rent house in West Texas, and I said aloud, if somebody will show me how to get out of this mess, I'll do anything on earth. I'll do anything on earth. And you probably said the same thing. And so you came to the meeting, but you were powerless. They told you this in the first step. You were powerless over alcohol. You're powerless over people. You're powerless over things. You're powerless over circumstances. But if you reached out your hand to the person sitting next to you, and this whole group of people join hands together, we represent a great deal of strength. We represent a great deal of unity. But we can't do a 12-step work on the other side of the world as an individual. So we have to devise methods by which this can be done, because this is vitally important to our growth. The fact that this move out of St. Louis or out of Dallas, Texas, and encompass the world, so that people living all over the world, people who speak other languages than ours, can have the benefits of this program. And we can't do it in St. Louis, Missouri, or in Dallas, Texas. So we have to utilize methods, and so we do. We have a World Service Office in New York City. And for a long time, in the early days of Al-Anon, these people could write letters to the then 50 groups and say, we've got such and such to do, what do you want to do about it? And the majority of the 50 groups would send their answer back and they could do it. But you can't do this with 5,000 groups. It's impractical. It's even dangerous. Because if you have a breakdown of communications, you're going to lose your project. So we have to have something to pull the groups in closer communication with the World Service Office. So what do we have? We have an annual conference meeting. And this conference is made up of delegates elected by you, the group, you, the individuals, to go to the World Service conferences once a year to present your ideas, to say what you're doing in St. Louis that's going great, what you're failing to do in St. Louis that's falling flat, what we're doing out in Texas that's fine, the problems we have, what they're doing in Arizona, New Mexico, Wyoming, all over the country, Virginia, Alabama, the whole bit. We take these ideas through the delegates to the World Service Conference. But then the World Service Conference only meets once a year, and the problem goes on every day. So there has to be another unit involved. And this is why we need a Board of Trustees. Because through the delegates and the World Service Office, the Board of Trustees can deal with these daily problems. But the Board of Trustees are planners of projects. We don't execute them. So then we have to go further. We have to have reliable committees to do the actual nitty-gritty day-to-day work, typing up the letters, writing a little notation in the book when we send them some dollars, few as they are, and all of these daily routine tasks. And so we have that. And you would feel that this would be a mammoth, unified effort, everybody knowing what they're doing, and this is true to a degree. But there's not enough of us. There just isn't enough. We only have 22 staff members, and all of those people don't work full time. We have 11 members of the Board of Trustees, and now two regional trustees, and soon the third. And we have 56 delegates, but we've got 5,000 groups. So what do? In times of extra work, we pool the efforts of the metropolitan area around New York, and we go out to the group, the chairman of the volunteer committee does, and she pleads with them, come in and help us. Come in and help us. And so the volunteers from the groups do this. They come in and do the tasks that are too great for the headquarters staff to do. For example, we send out 14,000 plus copies of the forum every month. And you can't believe that 22 people can do that, even if all of them work together, and they can't, because some of them have to be working in other departments. So the volunteers come in. During the time of conference, there's stacks of paperwork to be done, so the volunteers do it. And how do? You send your money up to New York. Sometimes it's not as graciously done down in our part of the country as it might be, and it's not as much as we should send, but your dollars do what you can't go into New York to do. So when these appeal letters come out from the World Service Office, it is not to the group, it is not to the assembly, it is not to the district, it is to you, each individual, to be able to show your gratitude for the sobriety in your home, or for the change of attitude that this program has brought to you, whether or not the alcoholic in your life is sober. This is your opportunity to show your gratitude. And these concepts are the framework that governs this top level, if that's what you want to call it, and it really isn't. There's no top level in Al-Anon, as you know, other than the loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. But this top level of managers in the office and on the Board of Trustees and in your World Service Conference, your delegates, have to have a framework within which to work. They, too, have to have a discipline. And my home group is delighted that we have a discipline that governs the Board of Trustees. They were quite sure, I'm sure, that I'd get some out of hand if I didn't have another discipline. And I'd like you to know that in a board meeting, you're very conscious of the group conscience, just like you are in an Al-Anon meeting at home.
the group conscience is there and you can feel it. Everybody's thinking together. Everybody doing what is best for Al-Anon. Not what's best for Western United States. Not what's best for Eastern United States. But for all of Al-Anon. What is best for us. And these things are not taken lightly and they're not passed over casually. Your group conscience is at work there. So your concepts govern this group of people. And there's no way for me to explain them to you except to read them to you. The concepts are the principles and the philosophies established for the guidance of the World Service Office and the World Service Conference. Bill Wilson spent several years developing suitable principles and philosophies which would coincide with the steps and traditions and with AA experience before writing the concepts of AA. Although Al-Anon is a separate entity, our fellowship has its roots in AA. Through our own Al-Anon experience, we have recognized the need for using three sets of principles. A poll of 100 or so groups in 1951 led to the adoption of the 12 steps as a way of life for the Al-Anon members. Later, the groups adopted an adaptation of the AA traditions as a framework within which Al-Anon would operate. And in 1968, World Service Conference approved unanimously the idea of Al-Anon developing its own concepts of service. A committee composed of in-town and out-of-town delegates, chaired by Lois Wilson, using their knowledge plus that of selected long-time members and contributions from the World Service delegates, prepared the tentative document which was presented to and accepted by the World Service Conference. Thus you can see that they were well considered and revised before they were affirmed. One theme welds the three legacies together. Pass along understanding. Please keep that in mind, and I want you to ask me questions, please do. Pass along understanding. We will repeat that again and again. Number one, recovery. The 12 steps urge the individual to carry the message to others. Number two, unity. The traditions protect the group from distracting or disrupting influences so they can be free to pass along this understanding. Service. The concepts show how 12-step work can be done on a broad scale, how the members of the World Service Office can relate to each other and to the groups, and to spread the Al-Anon message across the world, and how a conference of delegates from all parts of the continent can supervise this World Service so that it will always conform to the tradition. New Al-Anons and new delegates may want to make operational improvements. No doubt there are changes that may be necessary. If so, advocates can present a case to the trustees and the World Service Conference for consideration. For a period, any change should be called experimental. On final approval, the change can be entered as an amendment, thus leaving the original concept intact as a record of experience. Change does not always denote progress, and if amendments are found to be wrong, we have a means of safe return to the tried and tested. Concepts include a number of principles which have become traditional. For example, the right of decision gives service leaders proper discretion and latitude. The right of participation gives each World Service voting status commensurate with its responsibility. The right of appeal protects and encourages minority opinions. And the right of petition makes certain that grievances will be heard and acted upon. The concepts emphasize those important traditions, customs, relationship, and legal arrangements which weld the trustees into working harmony with the executive committee and the staff, the forum committee, and the primary committees of World Service Office. Emphasis is placed on a high order of personal leadership. The concepts restrain a tendency to concentrate money and power, which is often an underlying, if not a conscious, motivation. Concept number one. The ultimate responsibility and authority for Al-Anon World Service belongs to the Al-Anon group. Tradition number two declares, for our group purpose there is but one authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. This implies that the groups are to be the final authority and our leaders are delegated to responsibility only. In the early days of Al-Anon, as I've told you before, we called this little group the Clearinghouse, and we posed the groups for major questions, what to name the fellowship,
the purpose we've used, the method of support for our fellowship, but on the adoption of AA's 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, slightly modified, the Clearinghouse Incorporated under the title of the Al-Anon Family Group Headquarters. And in 9 years, Al-Anon jumped from 50 groups to 1,500 groups. Unity of purpose had replaced the early dissimilarity of groups. As Al-Anon grew, polling groups was impractical, and the groups voted to form the World Service Conference. The constant question of policy, which could not be settled by poll, presented a possibility that wrong decision might be disastrous. Now, through the delegates, the Al-Anon groups continue to hold ultimate responsibility and authority for world services, and these special elements of all over service activity makes it possible for our fellowship to function as a whole. And this brings us to concept number two. Concept number two, the Al-Anon family groups have delegated complete administrative and operational authority to their conferences and its service arms. In order to get effective action, we must delegate operational authority to chosen service representatives who are empowered to speak and act for the group. The group conscience cannot be heard unless this is done. Consequently, the principle of delegated authority and responsibility to our trusted servants must be implicit from the top to the bottom of our service structure. Our World Service Office is vitally important to Al-Anon's future. Without it, we could not effectively carry the message. Al-Anon would suffer serious damage if it were to bog down. This is the real reason for establishing a World Service Conference to whom our World Service Headquarters would be accountable. The World Service Conference has proven that Al-Anon groups, through their delegates, will take final responsibility for their World Service. The World Service Conference is the active voice and the effective group conscience of our whole society in world affairs. Concept number three, the right of decision makes effective leadership possible. All World Service boards, committees, and executives must know which matters they may promptly dispose of and upon which they will report, consult, or ask specific direction. We must trust them with these discretions, otherwise no effective leadership is possible. The charter of the World Service Conference and the bylaws of the Al-Anon Family Group Headquarters outline in broad terms these responsibilities of the World Service Office on behalf of Al-Anon as a whole. These instruments spell out in a large area of delegated service authority. They describe the relationship between the groups, the World Service Conference, the trustees, and active service units. Without these for reference, we could not operate. Charters and bylaws, important as they are, cannot ensure smooth functioning or proper leadership. For example, the Al-Anon groups might instruct their delegates how to vote. They can do this, but good management seldom means full exercise of ultimate rights. If the groups insist, then they assume that their opinion is superior to that of the World Service Conference. True, a delegate should discuss issues with the assembly, but he or she must be allowed to go to the World Service Conference uninstructed. Otherwise, he or she is a messenger, not a trusted servant. Actually, the delegate only in a secondary sense represents their own area. They are primarily world servants of Al-Anon as a whole. Again, the World Service Conference has almost complete authority over the trustees, but it would be foolish to hastily instruct the trustees to do something in matters that the World Service Conference knew nothing about. And this same applies in all directions. The trustees, the executive committee, all must temper their decisions to allow subordinates leeway in which to function. Our Al-Anon program rests squarely on the principles of mutual trust. Therefore, we can do no less than trust our leaders in service. The right of decision which we offer them is the only practical way they can operate, and it is also a symbol of our implicit confidence. Concept number four, participation is the key to harmony. The principle of participation is essential to our service structure. The World Service Conference Charter specifically provides that the trustees of the Al-Anon groups must always be voting members of the World Service Conference. This gives the trustees the right to vote at the World Service Conference and allows them to feel that they're not merely rubber stamps. Actually, at times, they're voting on their own activities, and this, of course, is only a fraction of their business. There's a good reason not to give delegates voting power over the trustees. Delegates only meet a few days each year and cannot have first-hand knowledge of many problems. The Board of Trustees, Executive Committee, the Conference, and the staff should all participate for purposes of efficiency and also the spiritual need to belong. The right of participation encourages us to serve Al-Anon and to accept the necessary disciplines required. It also assures one that he is truly a trusted servant. The rights of appeal and petition protect the minorities and assure that they are heard. Yes. Yes, I can. The delegates meet, as the text points out, once a year. There's 56 of them. The trustees meet every quarter. Now, what happens? The group sends their questions and their problems to headquarters. It is routed to the Board of Trustees meeting. It is considered there. The policy committee discusses it. For example, a letter came from my part of the country asking permission to start a group solely for those people who are divorced from AA members. This was discussed by the policy committee. It was discussed by the Board of Trustees and taken to the World Service Conference table. The delegates of the conference voted no. We do not have exclusive groups within Al-Anon. Our program encompasses all human problems. We can't have groups just for mothers, just for men, just for divorced people, just for widows, and so on and so forth. A trustee sits at each table of delegates. And during the conference, if I sat between Christine, Missouri, and Nebraska. I know all about Missouri and Nebraska. Next year, I'll probably sit between Oregon and something else. But if Christine had a question during the conference, she could relay this to the trustees, and this would be taken to a separate meeting after the session and discussed in that matter. We are there. We don't have to get secondhand reports. This is participation. I know what's going on at the conference because I am there, and along with the other members of the board, we can vote more intelligently. We are not rubber stamped. Now, this concerns each one of you individually, this appeal and petition. Its aim is to protect and make the best possible use of the minority feeling and opinion. Now, in principle, all persons are minorities should be encouraged to file minority reports when they feel a majority to be in considerable area, in error. For example, in your group, if you know that your group is doing something that is in violation of the tradition, but this is a misinformed or an uninformed group of newcomers, and they're going hell-bent for breakfast, they're going to sell wigs in the Al-Anon meeting, they're going to have demonstrations of cosmetics, they're going to sell Tupperware, and it's going to be done, and you have a meeting, and you vote, and the majority says, we're going to do it. The minority knows that this is a violation of tradition. And up to now, all you can do is gripe about it. Now you can do something constructive. When the issue is grave, it is the duty of the minority to file a petition. The right of appeal acknowledges that minorities can be right in whole or in part. They often compel a thorough debate on an important issue, which protects against an uninformed, misinformed, hasty, or angry majority. The right of petition permit any person in our service structure to petition for the redress of a personal grievance, carrying this petition clear to the Board of Trustees. This won't happen often, but it does provide the channel. Al-Anon has traditionally respected this minority privilege, but now it is specifically set out in this concept. Concept number 6, the conference acknowledges the primary administrative responsibility of the trustees. In order that the trustees may act freely and effectively in the absence of the conference must entrust them with the authority and responsibility. The trustees are, next to the conference, the most important group of world servants. They must possess the kind of professional and financial skills that are required for a balanced trusteeship capable of providing the effective leadership of Al-Anon. A review of the legal and traditional rights of the Board of Trustees clearly indicates that their actual administrative responsibilities, their authority in this field is great. Why do the trustees need this wide latitude of judgment and action? The answer is that they are held chiefly responsible for all of our service activities and Al-Anon's worldwide public relations. They lead in the formulation of Al-Anon's policy and execution. They are the bankers that are responsible for our budget, income, and reserve. They are the guardians of our traditions. Whereas the trustees must operate under the close observance and at times under the directions of the conference, there are many operations with which the conference is not familiar, and these decisions must be made by the trustees. If you give someone great responsibility, they must also have the authority and leadership to discharge it. While our objectives are spiritual, the aims of Al-Anon can only be attained through a good business operation. Concept number 7, the trustees have legal rights, while the rights of the conference are traditional. At first, this concept may appear contradictory. However, on one side, we have the Board of Trustees, who have legal power over Al-Anon's funds and services. And we have the World Service Conference, traditional influence and financial power sufficient to overpower the legal rights of the trustees. The actual power of the conference will nearly always be superior to the legal power of the trustees. Groups who choose delegates hold power over Al-Anon Family Group headquarters and the trustees through denial of monies on which to operate. We do not feel this will ever happen. Our trustees are not salaried, they are trusted servants. We could never contest the will of the conference. Experience shows that the balance of power between the trustees and the conference is thoroughly workable. The trustees do have a veto power over the conference, which is legally necessary and right in principle, even though it will seldom be used. Now, I'll give you 3 simple examples of the use of veto. Number 1, the conference in hasty action issues directives in violations of the charter. The trustees consider from past experience that action is not in the best interest of Al-Anon as a whole. So they return such actions to the conference for reconsideration and, if necessary, to the group. Number 2, the Board of Trustees may reduce the budget, even though it means canceling programs approved by the conference. Or the Board of Trustees can abandon an unworkable plan. Both the conference and the trustees should always consider the other's rights. Concept number 8, the Board of Trustees delegates full authority for routine management of the Al-Anon headquarters to its executive committee. Trustees are planners in matters of policy and finances, not operators. Consequently, they must delegate authority to operate the Al-Anon Family Group headquarters offices. These are routine operations which must go on day by day and cannot wait for the discussion of the Board of Trustees. This concept evolved by experience. Originally, the clearinghouse was advised by a committee of representatives of the nearby Al-Anon group. After incorporation of the headquarters in 1954, the trustees of the corporation formed the advisory board, which convened every 3 months. The trustees administered headquarters and ratified resolutions of the advisory committee. And in 1957, the advisory committee was formalized by a charter and called a board, who were the custodians of all the Al-Anon policy and finances. Eventually, it was thought that the conference could take place of the advisory board, and of course, this is what happened. The advisory board had its last meeting November 11, 1964. By this time, headquarters was so large and unwieldy that trustees or advisory board could not keep up with the day-to-day operations. Further problems of policy and finances grew and required time for the trustees. So the board decided to vest its administrative function to a more constant available 7-member executive committee. Now, this committee is made up of the headquarters staff and the chairman of all the committees. The executive committee is composed of 3 elective Al-Anon members, preferably not trustees, and the general secretary. There's always a strong connection between money and authority. This is a potent reason for forming separate entities for the management of these 2 dissimilar services. Concept number 9. Good personal leadership at all service levels is a necessity. In the field of world service, the Board of Trustees assumes the final leadership. No matter how carefully we design a structure of Al-Anon with its systems of checks and balances and its traditions, we will not function without good leadership. Good leadership cannot function in a poorly designed structure. Weak leaders cannot function at all in the best of structures. Good leaders are here today and gone tomorrow, so we must constantly try to find the right people for many service tasks. Group representatives are the primary principles of our group conscience. Groups should keep in mind that group representatives name committeemen, they name assembly officers and delegates. The leaders must be made to feel their responsibility. The qualification of a leader is sterling judgment, moral inspiration, dedication, stability, and vision. Special skills that make them capable of dealing with every assignment. A person who can put principles, policies, and plans into such dedicated, effective action that the rest of us want to back him up. One who can originate plans and policies, keeping principles before personalities, and knows how to weigh decisions and put them into action. One who can compromise in the proper spirit and at the proper time, and many other qualities, so we choose them carefully. Concept number 10, service responsibility is balanced by a carefully defined service authority, and double-headed management is avoided. There must be a good understanding as to their representative responsibilities and corresponding authority. Any working structure must have points where there is ultimate responsibility and ultimate authority. Final authority of the all-known groups has been entrusted to the conference and trustees. Conference delegates directly representing the groups are actually in a position of ultimate authority over the trustees. Legally, the authority is in reverse. Trustees have ultimate authority over standing and executive committees. Principles of ultimate authority run through our entire structure. Each function must be directed at a point where final responsibility rests so that each worker knows who makes the final decision. When any part of Al-Anon or any structure is not allowed specific authority, we have messengers, not trusted servants. Concept number 11, the World Service Office is composed of selected committees, executives, and staff members. Whereas the trustees hold the final responsibility for Al-Anon's World Service Administration, they must have the assistance of the best possible standing committees, staff, and consultants. The long-term success of our World Service Office rests not only on the capabilities of the trustees, but on a competent leadership and harmonious association of all others working in and for the Al-Anon World Service Office. The committees are the Budget Committee, the Public Relations Committee, Literature, Policy, Conference Committee, Institutionality, Nominating, Executive, and Editorial Committee. And there is a grave necessity for paid World Service workers to maintain continuity. Concept number 12, and this is the most important one of all, and the last one. The spiritual foundation for Al-Anon World Services are contained in the general warranties of the conference and on Article 12 of the Charter. In order that the conference shall never become the great seat of wealth or power, the general warranties of the conference read. Number one, that only sufficient funds, including an ample reserve, be its prudent financial policy. Number two, that no conference member shall be placed in unqualified authority over any other member. Number three, that all decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible, unanimously. Number four, that no conference action shall ever be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy. Number five, that though the conference serves Al-Anon, it shall never perform any act of government. And like the fellowship of Al-Anon, which it serves, it shall always remain democratic in thought and in action. The Charter is a flexible document. Its first 11 articles can be readily amended by the conference at any time. Now please pay close attention to this. At any time, the conference can readily amend any one of the warranties, except for Article 12. Article 12 stands alone. An amendment or cancellation of any of the vital warranties would require the written consent of three-fourths, not two-thirds, three-fourths of all the Al-Anon family groups listed in the World Service Directory. Each group should vote on any proposal after a six-month deliberation. Thus, changes in the warranties have been made difficult, but not impossible. And for those of you who are not group representatives or are not directly involved with World Service structure, Article 12 is that article which has to do with changing the precepts of our fellowship, the 12 steps and 12 traditions. This cannot be done at any time unless three-fourths of every group in all the world agrees to this, and it is done by a poll and after a 6 month deliberation. And in order to do this, the Board of Trustees would poll every single group, ask you to wait 6 months, send in your answer. Then this proposal would be taken to the World Service Conference and returned to the group for the second deliberation. As we said in the beginning, your Board of Trustees is the guardian of the precepts of our program. Changes in the warranties have been made just as difficult as we can make them, but they are not impossible. Throughout the concepts, our attention is again and again called to two words, authority and responsibility. The only legal authority in the Al-Anon Family Group Fellowship lies with the Board of Trustees. Our Board of Trustees, again, let me remind you, are the guardians of the precepts of our fellowship. And I like to reverse the word responsibility in reference to our Board of Trustees. The ability to respond, to the need of the group, to the need of the individual member, and the need to respond to the love of God as he may express himself in our group conscience. You've been exceedingly patient. I know the concepts are not the most exciting thing that we have in our fellowship, but they are extremely important. The groups will receive a copy of the concepts in the very near future. They are 34 pages long. For your enjoyment, I have reduced this little one to 9.5 pages, and I hope you appreciate it. But study the concept. Fill out the triangle. Learn why you're here. I think of this often. My only son, a few years ago, met a young man who was not an American citizen. This youngster was from another part of the country. He spoke 7 languages fluently, and I patronized him. But he had to learn about our Constitution in order to become a citizen. And so we went to the school library and we got him a copy of the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights and all these little goodies. And he studied it diligently. And so he came over to the house one afternoon and he said, "Mrs. O'Neill, do you know the Constitution of the United States?" And I said, I don't have to. I was born here. See what I'm talking about? Those people who are not members of our fellowship don't have to know these principles because they don't have our problem. But we came here because we have a problem. We found a solution to that problem in a 3-point program made up of 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts. And the big AA book says, "Half measures avail nothing." And I say to you that 1/3 measures avail you nothing. Now, you can study the 12 steps until you turn green in the face and get nothing. And you can add the 12 traditions and have 2/3 of the program and still get nothing. He didn't say you'd get 2/3 or 1/3. He said nothing. So line up your program. Study the 12 concepts and get all of the program. Half measures avail us nothing. And if you think this isn't true, you try it sometimes. You half work a step and see how much serenity you get and how much purpose for living you'll have. Just try it sometimes. You work the step thoroughly and you'll know the difference. And it's the same thing with the entire program. A 3-point program for a 3-fold illness. And we hear this over and over and over again. And I hope that when the concepts that come out to the group that you'll break them up in 12 segments, just like you have the steps and the traditions, and study them and make them a part of your thinking, because it's only in this way that you will derive full benefit from the program.